It's time for Cigar Talk, the fastest growing cigar show in the nation. Whether you're a new cigar enthusiast or a cigar aficionado, we have something for everyone. Bringing you the best interviews, cigar reviews. So grab yourself a cigar.
It's time to light them up.
Welcome back, Cigar Talk. I'm your host, Rob Jones. We got in the studio the one and only Jay Patterson from The Leaf as our co-host tonight. Welcome to the show, bro.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, man. Thanks for filling in for the original Thick Shady.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he had a knee replacement, and so far, everything's going very well for him.
And we hope it keeps going well.
Keep it going. Keep it going. But, we were actually going to record at his place today out on the front patio, and I decided I wasn't going to sweat my balls off.
Yes, it is like 102 degrees.
I don't know what it really is. I just know that it's hot. That's my thermometer. It's hot or it's not.
Truth. I think we averaged about 103 degrees for like the last 2.5 weeks.
Or 6 weeks.
Yeah. And well, today we had a cold front come in, everybody.
What was it, 98?
It was 98 degrees.
Yeah, and it's like
98.
And you know, the thing about it is, when I looked at the weather last week, today was supposed to be a high of 91, and I thought, oh, you know, I could probably do that. And then it was like, I went outside earlier, and I was like, hey, can I get Jay to come by? So thank you for doing that, and let's tell everybody what we're smoking. You got some special something.
Yeah, so right now I am smoking the last third of a Rome Craft Intemperance Whiskey Rebellion. It is it's quite nice.
Yeah, it's a good looking stick.
Yeah, I'm starting to get a lot of that leathery bold flavor coming through.
So, you know, I got a box of the Craft 22.
Yeah.
You would be impressed to know it's still sealed.
No way.
Yeah, sealed.
I put
that in the back of my humidor.
Yes.
I can't even see it.
I'm so proud of you.
Told me how good they were.
Yeah.
I was like, why are you telling me how good they are right out of the box?
Yeah. As soon as I had a chance, I smoked one. And I didn't do it just willy-nilly. It was a special occasion. It was a good friend, Michael Gilmore, up in New Mexico, and he shared one with me. It was fantastic. Now, they're all different, and so I can't remember the one that I chose. I just kind of reached in the box and grabbed one.
And none of them have bands, right?
None of them had bands.
Now, are the... And I don't know even what comes in the Craft 22 other than cigars, but it's like... What's one of them that... Is it the Neanderthal in there?
No. These are all artisan blended and wrapped cigars.
So there's not... These are not your regular Roma Craft.
Correct.
Wow. See, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, so they all look wicked weird. And they have two or three different shades to them, each one. And they're all different.
So completely different.
Yes.
And you get two?
No, one.
Of each one.
One of each one.
So there's 10 different cigars.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't it nuts? It's a home run. So we smoked four of them, and each one of us said home run each time. So it's a home run for every 10 stick, theoretically, and it's... By far, probably the best Roma Craft I've had.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. So, Zaketh threw this out. He said this reminded him a lot of the 2019 Craft, but it's in the... Except this is in the Robusto Vitola versus the Toro of 19.
Yeah, if I remember correct, the 19 was more of a torpedo-shaped.
Okay.
And so that I...
But what about the blends?
The blends, I believe, taste similar. The overall shape, I believe, was like a cone.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I could see how like I've been able to get a hold of so few of those. But in comparison, yeah, I could see those tasting similar, but I'm sure there's a lot of difference on the back third.
Ah, gotcha. So, do you have any more?
Of the 2022?
Yeah.
We have...
that are available.
Available, I've got about 3 boxes left.
Okay. Because, you know, I was in the back talking about picking up a box, and Coxon was like, man, I got to get me one of those. And I was like, yeah. Oh, man, you're too late. They're already sold out. And, I mean, his face dropped. And I was like, yeah, man. Dude, they sold out in like 3 days. Anyway, he went up there to go ask and came back with the box. So, you know, Coxon.
Yeah.
But he opened up the box right then. And then I think it was the day before Father's Day. So he smoked one with his dad for Father's Day.
He posted a picture of that. Yeah.
That was nice. And you know what I told him? And
what's that?
He wouldn't make the deal with me. I said, how about you give me one of those, and in 6 months to a year when I open my box, I'll give you one back. And he was like, no.
I would have.
Right. I was like, dude, you're getting the aged edition.
Exactly.
I'm getting this now because I really want to know, but I don't want to open my box.
Yep.
I feel like I can't. If I open the box... then I'm going to smoke the whole damn box.
Now, you might.
Well, I mean, is it one of those cigars that you think is like, when you say home run, are we talking home run special occasion cigar? Like, you know. Now, when I say special occasion, I don't mean we're giving them out to people that don't really smoke cigars on special occasions. That's not what I mean. I'm talking about, let's just say, for an example, Larry died. And we were going to, you know, smoke one in his honor. Would it be that level of home run?
Yes.
Wow. See, now I want to open the damn box. No. All right. No.
Now it's Larry.
Yeah.
Now, if Bryant died, no, I'm kidding. Yeah, it's fantastic blends. The one that I had was very flavorful. It was very smooth through the last third.
Earthy and like that volcanic soil experience with some leathers and, you know, a little spice on it.
It got there. So the one that I chose was more of a candela wrapper on the foot, the first third. Mm-hmm. And so it was playing around for the first third. And then it really kind of just... it played around a little bit, and then it kind of just drove home that underlying note.
You're making it sound like one of my dates from high school. You know,
yeah.
I played around, and then I drove it home, you know? Just saying.
I believe it.
Hey, and we're drinking courtesy of Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
The old early times ball and bond.
Early times,
and I mean,
baby.
You can't go wrong with this.
No, it's a trusty blend.
I mean, when you find a bottle of bourbon that has, and I'm a classic taste guy on bourbon. Are you?
I am. My business partner, for those of you who have listened,
he likes the fruity.
He likes he likes scotch,
right?
And so I've been trying to develop my palate of scotch.
How's that going?
I think it's been going pretty good.
But I mean, are you enjoying it?
Like I am.
Do bourbon? Like what's the difference? I'll put it that. And just so everybody's, and I've had 4 or 5 scotches. Mm-hmm. There was one that I really used to like. There was one that I loved, but I only had it once, and it's way out of my price range, like, unless I inherit something big.
Yeah.
But I'm not a scotch guy.
You know what's stupid about scotch?
What?
Price.
But it's a different animal. It is not bourbon.
No, it's not. So, for example, the Glenmorangie 14-year, it's aged in port casks. it's excellent. It's got a sweetness to it. It's got a little bit of the bourbon note that wow. people would recognize. But it's not weeded or it's not a rye. It's just different. And
Does
the reason
have
is
the peatiness.
No.
Really?
It has zero peat. So if nobody likes peat,
I don't like peat.
And they want to try Scotch, Glenmorangie, 14 year.
Okay. I'm more of a Paul. Some yeah. people are more of a peat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I used to really, really love Springbank. That was my go-to Scotch.
Yeah.
And I hadn't had it in over a year. Somebody had some at the Leaf. I think it was Ed. And
of course.
And I poured me some. And when I drank it, I was like, wow, that is peaty. Mm. But I used to not think it was peaty at all.
Yeah.
When I was just trying different Scotches, I was like, oh, this is no peaty.
Right.
And then after not drinking any Scotch in a year and then going back to it, I was like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Because when you compare it to bourbon, it's very peaty. But when you compare it to your average Scotch, it's not very peaty.
No, it's not. Springbank is, it's what, the last Scotch that's distilled the old world way.
No machines, no machines. Computers. I mean,
so
hats off to that.
I would imagine that certain batches of Springbank will be peaty, but for the most part, it's going to be slightly peaty.
And maybe I got a batch that was a little higher than normal. I don't know.
Right. Because when you have something done the old world way and not computer guided way, there's going to be human element to it. And it's going to...
Yeah, you don't have a robot splitting atoms.
Yeah. So it's going to have some discrepancy.
I got you. So, yeah, I don't... That's, you know what? I'm so happy with the bourbons. Like, in my journey, like right now, I really just enjoy bourbon at a level I never thought I would.
There's so many.
There's so many. But it's funny how so many of the really good ones...
Yeah.
...are, like, under $40.
Yeah.
How many scotches can you say that about?
Zero.
You know what I mean?
You're looking at, like, $65-$70. And a couple of years ago, the price of Scotch went up. So you could have, at one point, found good Scotch for $50 or so. Now it's $65.
And why do you think that is? I mean, is it supply and demand, and the demand went up, or the supply went down?
No, the price went up before
the pandemic.
This whole pandemic. And I think it was primarily because of... I think it was because of production.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, production slowed down.
Well, I would imagine that if this happened pre-pandemic, that over the next 2 years, we're going to see Scotch continue to go up in price.
I hope not, but I'm
with you.
But you can
see where that...
Yeah.
I mean, if it was going up just before the pandemic...
Yep.
I got to think it's going to, like, show a lot of increase over the next 2 years.
Oh, but yeah.
You never know.
You never know. But honestly, I think you got it. It's going to go up. So if you like Scotch, pick it up now. Glenmorangie. I remember picking it up for maybe $50 a bottle.
And
now it's like 12? 65. Yeah. Glenmorangie 14.
Oh, 14.
Yeah.
And what's the price point on that?
It's $65 or so.
That's not bad.
It's not bad, but it's a lot more than what it used to be.
Yeah, but if you're talking about a high or a very enjoyable Scotch, like whenever I was buying Springbank like 4 years ago, it was $62.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it costs now.
Well, that's because of the old world style, but with Glenmorangie 14, you know, you got computers helping out with the cost overhead. And when you look at Glenmorangie, and I might be pronouncing that wrong, but if you look at it overall, cost has been going up steadily as we've gone become along.
More popular.
Yeah. Well, it could be popularity.
I mean, if you think about Heaven and Hill, Ball and Bond.
Yeah.
What's that? A price point's about, what, 45 on average?
It'd be 45, 50. Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to say 2 years ago, that bottle was $13.
Isn't it nuts? So this guy comes in, right, to the shop, and he says, hey, this is 2 years ago. 2 years ago. He says, hey, boys, you like bourbon? We're like, Scott and I were like, yeah. Because we weren't so blatant at that time.
Right.
And so we said, yeah, from time to time we do. He goes, you got to try this one. I found it in Fort Knox. It is called Eagle Rare. And we're like, oh, okay. Now, Eagle Rare at that time loaded the shelf. Remember that? Like, you could go to any store and get Eagle Rare.
And how about Colonel?
Yeah, E.H. Taylor. Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I saw a bottle on your desk the other week, other day by the week. But,
well, that's another story.
Yeah. But, in fact, when I saw it, Colton was there, and I was like, dude, where did that come from? And it's like, I'm a fan. In fact, that was one of the very first bourbons that I drank on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And now, I haven't seen that on the shelf in 2 years.
And it goes back to your point, like, as soon as it becomes popular, it becomes scarce.
Right.
And so it goes back to the old adage that we use at the cigar shop, like, oh, it's really good. Don't tell anybody about it. Just, you know, those in the know buy it.
Right.
One.
As now, when that happens, how long does it take for the people in the know to not be able to hold their tongue and just kind of, you know?
Not long. I mean, at all.
because also, I mean, even though you're in the know, we are really good friends with a lot of people that we're like, they deserve to have one of those.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? You want to tell your friends, you want to tell your colleagues, you want to tell everybody about this, and then it's that desire inside to share this goodness.
Right.
And then it hits you on the back end, the realization that, oh, it's a limited supply, so the demand is going to go up. But at the same time, you want to share. Like, you're not greedy. You want to share this goodness that you found.
Let me tell you this story. And Will Coxon, I'll tell you this at the end. But Will Coxon comes over. He's on the show, and he's lighting up something that I'd smoked before, and I was lighting up a Torpedo Julius Caesar. And when I said what I was going to smoke, he was like, oh, I never had one of those. And I was like, oh, you suck. Here you go. Have it. And he was like, no, I didn't ask for it. I'm like, I've had them before. You've never had one. That's how we think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like I was getting ready. What's funny is he hated it. I was like, damn, I should have kept that one. But, you know, it's not about whether he liked it or not. He had the experience. And now he can base what he likes going forward or doesn't like on that experience. So when someone tells me they've never had something I'm smoking, I almost always give it to them.
Yeah.
In fact, I did that with Kevin, one of your guys. And he gave us 3 Gurkhas. Special Gurkhas.
Wow.
And mine, within the first half inch of burn, the entire wrapper came off.
Yeah.
I mean, all of it. And I tried to smoke. I smoked half of it with no wrapper.
Oh, man.
And then I was like, you know what? Life's too short. Can't do it.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, when I seen Kevin at the shop like 2 or 3 days later, he was like, hey, man, let me take you in the humidor. I'm going to buy you whatever you want. And I was like, why? Well, I feel bad about giving you that cigar and it exploded. And I was like, dude, it's a handmade product. Sometimes that's going to happen. So you don't owe me a cigar. Thanks for the gesture. And, you know, you could go from there, right? You don't, like, make someone repay you for a gift.
Right. So, it's a natural product. Your experience is going to differ from somebody else's. From the same stick to a different stick, but more especially a same stick where, like, you try even the Diamond Crown and the Julius Caesar, he's not going to like it. But at the same time, there are nuances of the of that stick that talk to you.
And sometimes, because the experience is not so good, like, the overall was, like, very disappointing, but there was a few nuances that spoke to your subconscious, and when you, it will call you back. In my case, at least, I've had it where it's like, I've said a cigar was not good, and then, I, you know what? I don't know why the hell I would smoke it again if I originally said it wasn't good, but I ended up smoking it again.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know what? There was a little something there that I missed.
Yeah.
And then I'll smoke it again, and 3-4 cigars in, I'm like, this is a really good stick. So when I say I don't like something, I didn't enjoy it at that moment. It doesn't mean that I just will never like it, although there are some cigars that I'll never like. Espinosa. Not Espinosa. Sorry, Big Tony. I didn't mean that.
Big Tony, come over here.
I invited him. He was down in Longview last weekend. Longview? No. Nacogdoches doing a show.
Nah.
But anyway, what's the Carrera?
Esteban.
Esteban Carrera. You know, it's just not a cigar for me.
Yeah.
We talked about that.
We have.
And I've tried.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, I still think it's hilarious. Like, all the talk I did saying that that brand's not for me. And then, like, 2 years later, you give me a cigar with no band on it and say, hey, check this out. Let me know what you think. And then when you came over, you're like, hey, how was that cigar? How, what did I say? I was like, it was horrible. I didn't like it.
Terrible.
I was apart. Like, I was
like, tastes like shit.
What is it? You told me. And I was like, see, I told you. It's just, it's something about one of the tobaccos or the blend or something that just, it, like, it doesn't land well with me.
Yeah,
I mean, the cigar, it just doesn't work for me. I don't know why.
And for the most part, I think a lot of blenders and cigar brands, they're not, you know, 0.0 specific. And so when you have a certain line of cigars, you have some leeway. You got to give them some leeway. Mm-hmm. But if you can't find an enjoyment in that leeway, try something else.
That's what I do.
Yeah. Whereas other cigars, like, oh, I smoked this one and it burned perfect. It was great. And well, then I think the next time is,
I think,
like,
the whole, I think there are cigar companies that nail it, though,
yeah,
on their construction, consistency. You know what I mean? They nail it. Tabanero, how many people have you had bring a Tabanero up to me like, hey, dude, this is plugged?
Zero.
And, I mean, hats off to that. Now, are you aware of who does the work for Tabanero?
No.
I could tell this story a little bit wrong because I'm not 100%. I know it's all true. And I just don't remember the names. And so I was talking to Omar from Integra Boost. And what he told me was, when I was brought up Tabanero to him, was, you know who makes his cigars? And I was like, well, I know he does it down in Nicaragua. He had a factory come on and work with him to replicate exactly what his blend is from the original Tabanero. And then, like, mass produce it. And when we say mass produce, we're not talking like General Cigar mass production, but being able to step up a few hundreds of cigars versus, you know, he was rolling all of his cigars in his own shop in Florida and he couldn't keep up, and they don't have the floor space to keep adding rollers. So they were like, I got to do something. And they went down to Nicaragua and they found a factory to take over most of the production. Well, the owner of this factory is the nephew, I believe. That's the part I could have wrong. It could be a nephew. It could be a cousin. It could be someone in the group of AJ Fernandez. And so this guy worked alongside AJ for a lot of his life. And I mean, he's still a young man. I believe he's like 30-ish, maybe a little bit under that. And so you've got a guy that learned from the master, and that's just going to blow the doors off the entire cigar market over the next 10 years. And so I got to wonder what that looks like when I say in another 10 years. Can you imagine what the landscape of the cigar community will look like in 10 years? I mean, you think about just the dynamic change of the last 10 years. In 2012, what cigar manufacturing and lounges were 10 years ago compared to just today, can you imagine what it's going to be like in another 10 years?
I can't imagine that at all.
I mean, like, but let's take a stab at it.
So
I mean, where do you see, and let's narrow it down, like, where do you see the industry as far as cigar shops in general in 2032?
In 2032, I see cigar shops being very similar to what they are now. I don't think the FDA is going to be able to overcome the cigar industry. What I do see is technologically what the cigar shops are going to be. And just right now, we see a lot of people coming in asking about brands we don't have, and we quickly try to find the tasting elements and the blends that cigars that they are asking
for.
So
you basically like pull up that cigar reference.
Yes.
And get like what the notes are, what the strength is.
Yeah.
And be like.
And so before we say, oh no, we don't have that, or in conjunction with we don't have that, we say, we don't have that, but very similarly, we have X. And that's because of the data we can pull from a wide sample group denoting the experience, the flavor profile, the nuances of the cigar. And so in 10 years, I see us having a database of some kind that will allow us to log on and type in, or if not, just, you know.
Let me tell you something. So a guy sent me a message on Instagram.
Yep.
And he sent me a link to their cigar database type app.
Yep.
And I know there's been other ones out there. I don't remember their names. And when I was watching the video, because he also sent me a video of how the process of the app works.
Yeah.
And after watching the video, I was like, that tool to me is not a tool for me. But for a tool for a cigar shop or a tobacconist at a shop, I think it would be amazing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I was like, I don't see how an app like that would ever take off just with the consumers. I don't think there's enough consumers that want to keep a database of everything they've ever smoked. I know there's some guys out there that do.
Yes.
And that's awesome. And so, but the majority, I don't see that. And so when the guy sent me that app and I looked at it, I thought, you're never going to make it with just consumers. But if you were to like make it a tool for shops, you might be able to market it that way. But I don't think that the regular consumer wants to keep track of every cigar that's ever been smoked.
I don't think so either. And so I think the consumer tracks experience. The retailer tracks the actual data because they want to replicate the exact experience that got them into cigar smoking.
In the first place.
In the first place. And so with that, the consumer doesn't really need the data. They just want to have the same experience. And then it becomes
and
the
duty.
And then
what it all comes about is, as long as your cigar is not plugged or falling apart on you, the experience is less about the cigar and more about who are you smoking with? Where are you at? What's the environment?
I would say 80% that's accurate. Right. A lot of times it's, well, I like this note to it. And so it's either like a coffee or a baking spice
and
or
that's,
a
and that's
leather.
Someone who is on that journey, still in the early stages, because most people don't need to tell you that. We already know what wheelhouse we're in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So once you've been around a while, at least 80% of the experience is, who are you with?
Who are you with?
What's the environment like?
Yeah. What's your overall experience?
You give me a great environment and good people to smoke with, I'm freaking there. And that's what you've done.
Thank you.
Well, I mean,
but
you know,
true. Like
it's you provide the environment and good people.
I want people to have the best possible experience in smoking cigars as possible.
And with your freaking amazingly huge humidor, I can't imagine someone coming in and being like, hey, I'm looking for this. And you go, oh, we don't have it. And then they leave. It's like, we don't have that, but welcome to Abilene's own Noah's Ark. Enjoy your journey through this huge room full of beautiful cigars.
And that's an ongoing process. And that's what...
Because you can never carry every cigar. It's not possible.
No,
and
not,
you don't, and you
not
probably
possible.
Don't want to.
Yeah.
But, because, you know, there's going to be cigars that if you bought a box and put in there, you would still be selling that box of cigars in 10 years. Because the only person on the planet that likes them just happened to come in once a month.
Right.
You know what I mean? So yeah. You can't bring all those cigars in, but
correct.
You can give them a great experience, although the cigar they were hoping for is not there.
Yeah. And that's another thing, too. Our guys have to be continuously expanding their palate because people that come in for a specific cigar and we don't have it, we want to be able to pair them with the best possible replica or...
That's taking it to another level. Like, when your guys, like, have worked through those type of palettes, they've put in time to get to know, like, what profiles fit what you're looking for. And that's... Dude, that's amazing.
Yeah. And... I chuckle because, like, what? Why wouldn't you? Like, the availability is there. The time is there. Just smoke something. Smoke something weird that you wouldn't really smoke.
You know what? I need to do that again. I need to do that again. Because, you know, I get in a rut.
Yeah.
I know where I go.
Correct.
But, like, the time I walked down the aisle with my eyes closed and just reached out and found Cristobal.
Yeah.
It was like amazing experience.
Yeah.
And that's not even a weird stick. It was just a randomness of not actually knowing that part of the humidor. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't normally go right in here.
Well, it's because it's the front left. You usually go to the front right,
left.
Back right.
Right.
You know, so, but yeah, it's, I would say two things. One, try something you haven't tried before. See if you like it. Two, trust in your tobacco store, tobacconist, and just tell them what you like. And then,
well, and that's the biggest step, though. I tell people all the time, when you go to a shop, talk to the tobacconist.
Yeah.
I've never had that go wrong.
it is, it's by far the best resource you have. And guess what? It's free.
And
it's part of the experience.
Let me tell you this, too. Like, if you walk into a shop you've never been to and you see the regular guys that are, you know, there every day.
Yeah.
Or often. You could go up to those guys and ask them and they could point you to a damn good cigar.
100%.
But they don't know what your palate is and they are going to tell you what they really, really like, which is also a great thing to experience, because if you're not on the level those guys are, they're going to steer you towards something really good, but you may not be ready for it.
Yeah, I would say two things, two questions to ask. Paramount. One, and this is all gauging upon if you're approaching a cigar smoker in the lounge that you go to. Number one, hey, what are you smoking? Boom, you got this stick. Two, hey, do you prefer medium, light, or full body? And then from there, you can say, all right, they're smoking this. They prefer full body. I'm going to try to find something similar.
And then the whole time after you've asked them those questions, then you're like, and I'm going to take a stab at it here, but I'm going with, you're circumcised. No?
Mostly. Once you sit down at the table,
then you dive in a little deeper.
Get the question. Gotcha. Yeah, yeah. And then
walking,
you know,
into your lounge, like 90% of the time, I just go in the back because it's comfortable. You know, it's really comfortable. But it's amazing to me at how much fun that the guys and girls that are sitting up front are having too.
Oh, absolutely.
It's two amazing, like, environments.
Yeah, because you go for the back and you're already smart cigar smokers. You know what you like. You can bypass the normal mumbo jumbo and get into real topics. In the front, it's all the, you know, I'm pledging this process.
And there's a lot more talk about the cigar.
Yeah, there's more talk about the cigar. And so you got more, hey, this one tastes kind of funny, or this one tastes more like, hey, oh my God, I taste like chocolate in here. Yeah, you know, keeping in mind, it's not like a chocolate cigar, but it's...
No, but when you get that chocolatiness, I mean, I hope that just about, like, let's say the Sin Compromiso. When I smoke that cigar, I'm like, it's Easter, and I'm having chocolate. Because it's chocolatey. Now, not like a candy chocolate.
Yeah.
But you get that experience of having chocolate, like really a fine chocolate.
I would agree. It's like, imagine this. It's Easter morning. And you decide, I'm going to chew on this piece of leather. And you're chewing on leather. And you got, like, some taste from it. And you're like, oh, I've been invited to an Easter egg hunt. And all of a sudden, you find, like, a chocolate Easter egg. And you chew that. You don't lose that taste of that leatheriness.
Right.
It's already in your mouth. But you add to it that chocolate.
Another layer.
Yes. And so...
Or a dark chocolate.
Yeah.
Because to me... Like the Sin Compromiso is more of a semi-sweet where you get the dark with a little hint of the creamy, smooth chocolate. You know what I mean?
Truth.
Which is one of the unique flavor profiles of a chocolate found in a cigar.
Yes.
Because of them are very one or the other.
Yeah. And more times than not, it's the dark chocolate.
Right. That's where they always go. But when you add in a little bit of that sweetness, it's like, you know, the bittersweet.
Yeah.
I dig it. Now, do you smoke a lot of Sakka?
I've smoked all the Sakka we have.
Okay, which one's like the one that does it for you?
You know what? honestly, the one that does it for me is the Brulee.
You know what? I've heard that. That's why I wanted to ask, because Julio, have you talked to Julio about that cigar?
I have. I've been there when he had his first Brulee, and
I mean, he needed a hand towel when he was done. He fell in love with that cigar.
He did.
And now, it's like the other day, we were talking about cigar price points, and he was like, oh, yeah, that's too high. And I'm like, dude, the cigar you're smoking right now. And I was like, that's a value at that price point because of how much you love it.
And that goes to another aspect, like, how much do you pay for a cigar? For a good cigar.
Well, I would like to answer that question.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Okay.
And it also, there's so many answers because so many people are on different levels of their journey. Like for me, for the first 5 years, well, I roll back. For the first year, I smoked cigars that were $15 to $20 because I thought that's got to be a good cigar.
Right.
Then when I actually started smoking cigars regularly, I was smoking a lot of cigars, but I was buying the cheapest stuff I could get. You know what I mean? Because I was like, if I can get a cigar for $4 or $5, I can smoke four today.
Right.
And then I started trying other cigars that were a little more expensive. So then I break into the $8 range and I'm like, holy shit, these are like night and day.
Yes.
Like that was smokable, but this is good. And then from the $8 cigar range, I got into the $10. And then the next thing you know, I'm smoking the Cabinet 6 from LFD. And I think, 11, 12?
Yeah, it was 11.25.
Yeah, that's right, 11.25. And I was like, these are so good, I'm going to buy a box. And they come in a box of 50. So it's not cheap.
No.
In fact, you remember Kelly?
Yes.
Kelly was who sold me that box. I mean, I was so excited to bring that box. I want to say that was probably my second box purchase. And I remember her, like, Bill come walking through, and she's like, hey, Bill, do you get 10% on these when you buy a box? And he was like, hell yeah. And I was like, sweet, I didn't even know that. So at that time, though, that's what I thought a cigar should be.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Was it? Yeah.
It was the Cabinet 6. I thought that was the best cigar that had ever been made. And it was at the $12 price point. So you were saying about what cost, what does a good cigar cost?
A good cigar is, honestly, it's relative.
Absolutely.
And so,
because I'm not going to spend $11.25 or whatever they cost now on a Cabinet 6 because right. I can buy a Medallia. I can buy a Roma Craft. I can buy
Project 40
yep. for all under that. And I've outgrown that. Like, I think the Project 40 Maduro is way more complex than the Cabinet 6 ever was.
Oh, so chocolatey. So the thing that boggles me is with what we have available now is that we have so many cigars and brands that have tried so hard to find their way into this.
You have this massive
not
space,
cheaper, but
it is full.
Right. More cost-effective market. So we have so many cigars that are just bangers. They're bangers at this price point. Between $6 and $8, they're bangers. Now, that doesn't discount that if you go beyond that, you're not going to get a better quality experience because
I love some of the bangers.
Yes.
To me, a banger is a San Latano AJ, not a San Latano, the Cameroon.
Yeah.
What is it? New World?
It's a New World Cameroon.
That's a $8 stick. That is a quality cigar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know how they do that price point, to be honest with you. It's a good stick. But I also think that's AJ's goal, is to maintain the affordability to your blue collar worker.
100%. Like, and if you are gearing toward more white collar and more high end cigars, you gotta understand in this market, at least in the US, your clientele dramatically decreases.
Oh yeah.
Like your
I mean, what percentage of your customers are blue collar versus white collar?
White collar to blue collar, I'd say like 1 to 1 billion. Everybody in Abilene is a blue collar worker. Like they work for a living. They buy cigars because they have had to budget their cigar purchases. They don't go out because they want to buy a cigar. They go out because I want a cigar. This is how much I can pay for it.
Let me tell you a little secret. So you just nailed it. Like, guys actually make a budget for cigars. I did it the opposite. I bought as many cigars as I could get my hands on, and I went broke. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to fix this. I want to be able to smoke this many cigars.
Yeah.
So then I started Cigar Talk. So there you go, folks.
There you go.
You want to smoke a lot of cigars, start a talk show on cigars.
All right.
That's what we need is another 30 no more cigar shows.
No, but, you know, based on your experience and as what I've seen as a retailer, there are cigars that are just phenomenal for your price range. Don't feel bad that you can't buy Padron 26s or Opus X or, you know, any of these other high-dollar brands.
Did there I tell are- you I bought an Opus X a couple weeks ago?
No.
I don't even remember which one it was.
There you go.
On the shelves, how you have them, like when you open it up, it was one of the ones like right here. So on your side, right here. Yeah. Right here. And you know what? I couldn't tell you a thing about that cigar. But you know what? Every once in a while, you're like, you know what? Fuck it. I deserve this. I'm going to smoke this. And then, you know what? I don't remember anything about the smoke because of all the people I was hanging out with in the back. I remember that.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it, too. You know?
And that's the thing, too. Like, a lot of people will smoke cigars and smoke fancy cigars. But what stands out the most is the experience, which entails not just the cigar, but where you are, who you're with, what you're doing.
You know what I've noticed too?
What's that?
In the back with all the guys that are like, you know, hardcore cigar smokers.
Like you?
I've noticed that people are taking their bands off.
Yeah.
Like, we're not bragging about what we're smoking.
Yeah.
Now, it's hard for me to do that because I've always been in the mindset that this band is holding my cigar together.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you've taken a band off before, and what happened?
Falls apart.
Right. Now, that doesn't always happen.
No, not at all.
But it's the noticing that people are taking their bands off so that they're not bragging about their cigars that I find very intriguing. It's like, that's how kosher the room is.
Yeah.
Like, we don't give a shit what you're smoking. It's not because we don't want to know if it's good. It's just that we're not here about the cigar.
It lends back to
about the community.
Yes.
And I think, hats off to you and Corey for making a space available for that type of community, because I think across the country, guys are missing that. I think you're what you've put together. I think there was always that at the Leaf on a level, but you have allowed that to grow tremendously.
Yeah.
That's what you've done. You built a community. There's no doubt. But you've allowed that community to expand and grow together.
Hear, hear.
Cheers, bro.
Cheers.
Mm. Let me pass that bottle over here. That was it for me. Thank you. Early times.
What? Well, Bob, Rob was hinting at or telling was, it doesn't matter if you're smoking a Davidoff or an Opus X or a Monte Cristo or a Julia de Nicaragua or a Tabanero.
Well, you don't,
it doesn't matter. What matters is the brothers of the leaf, the sisters of the leaf, that really just join in community when you are just consuming the same quality tobacco and you can just find a peace. You know what I find that in the most often?
What's that?
Masonry.
Like building bricks?
No, you know that I'm a Mason, right?
Oh, okay. Well, usually you say the whole thing, not just masonry.
Yeah.
That makes me think of, you know, I'm laying bricks. Sorry.
No, it reminds me a lot about that. And there's a lot of brotherhoods and sisterhoods that find a common ground where everybody is equal, that experiences different things throughout their life, but you are equal. Same with cigars. You might like a flavored cigar. You might like a Macanoodle M coffee or, you know, espresso or whatever.
Did you smoke a Groovy Blue not long ago?
Yeah, bro.
You did, didn't you?
Well, I did.
I know, because I heard. I was like, what the hell?
Okay, everybody listen up.
There's an experience. I've never had one, but I would love, because I've smelled one.
You want to hear it?
I do.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you my Groovy Blue experience. And if you want, I'll tell you my Tatiana experience. Mm. So Groovy Blue, as you know, is made by Esteban Carrera. So
again.
Yeah. So my experience was dictated by a very pleasurable, great quality tobacco and wonderful, flavorful experience. And that's what I got, for the most part. What I didn't anticipate was the sweetness of the stick, particularly.
On your lips.
Yes. The sweetness on your lips, as well as the room note of the tobacco itself, is a lot of berry, wild berry fruitiness. And so, although it wasn't a bad constructed cigar and a bad, you know, short to long filler cigar, it was different. It was one that made my landlord probably very happy because it smelled really, really nice.
It sounds to me like you took a poodle to the foo-foo shop and they sprayed grape buttermilk juice on its butthole. I mean,
to be fair.
And then we rubbed the cigar across it.
To be fair, it was very grape.
Yeah, that does not sound good to me.
So if you want like a grape flavored cigar, and I tried to make it as nice as possible, the Groovy Blue by Esteban Carrera is a very perfect cigar for you.
I've never had it, but it's very potent.
It's very potent.
Because the smell it puts off is very potent.
Now, you know, the Groovy Blue, or sorry, the Purple Haze by Esteban Carrera is blended for the Groovy Blue. I think I might have forgotten. You're talking about the Groovy Blue, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the Groovy Blue, the Groovy Blue is like, I'm going to tell you the box contents.
Okay.
So what it says on the box is honey, cognac, bourbon, vanilla, and wild berry.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And I'm going to guess right now, very, very light at all on the bourbon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
When it says the bourbon, it's like taking that caramel and like rubbing it on the side.
Yes.
I'm not down.
Now, if you don't want that.
Did you smoke the whole thing?
Yes.
All of it.
Well, I smoked to the last third.
Did you smoke into the last third?
I don't know.
Okay. Was it brutal?
No, it was quite nice. It was very smooth, and it was
it was very smooth, and it was very smooth.
It was very smooth, and it you could taste the sweetness on the smoke. You could taste the sweetness on your lips, but all in all, it wasn't the most terrible cigar I've had.
Wow!
Now, yeah.
Here's another question. Have you ever smoked a Trader's Jack?
Yes.
Have you really?
Yes.
Wow.
Here's the thing about
now,
the leaf.
How awful was that? Dude, come on.
So at the leaf, we might not all the time right away smoke what we have. What we will do is smoke what we have in time. And so I smoked the Trader Jack because we carried Trader Jacks. It was actually very smooth. It burned fast. But it's not as like you smell it. When you smell it in the jar.
When you open that lid.
Yeah, it's very.
It's death.
Yeah. It smells like
if you sprinkled sugar on a dead butthole. That's what it smells like. All right, it's awful.
It doesn't smell great to those that know what cigars should smell
right?
like.
It's awful.
But the Trader Jack, all in all, it smelled that same way, but it smoked really well. And it was very delicate in its flavor.
Was it really?
I figured it was just. It was a light to medium body, and it actually had more of a. The room note was more floral than the actual taste of the cigar.
Really?
Yes, the taste of the cigar I would classify as sweet to leather. But for the most part, it was not bad.
Wow.
Like, it wasn't the most horrible thing I've smoked.
And isn't it funny? Now,
I've smoked a lot of bad things.
But let me tell you this. From what you just described to me, though, it was better than you anticipated it to be because you had a mental vision of what it would be like to smoke one.
Oh, yes.
So it was actually better than you thought.
It was. And so the mental capacity of one's mind is very strong, and it will indicate and it will...
Because I'm going to tell you right now, I will not smoke one, okay?
Yeah.
I'm just not. But...
He will smoke one. I'll get him one.
Yeah. Don't do that, Jay. Anyway.
It's a real...
I just think that whenever it comes to your mental block on, I can't smoke that. I'm not going to do that.
I will say this. If your mental block is, I cannot smoke that.
Live with it.
And there's nothing else to smoke.
Okay, well, now we're taking it to the desert island. There's a box of these Trader Jack's wash up. I'm smoking it, okay?
Right. So,
and you know what? They probably won't last for 3 days. There's a box of 20, and I'm on a desert island by myself. I got some armadillo cooking on the barbecue. Yeah. I'm smoking them.
So, a lot of times you find these cigars, and there's other things to smoke. If you want to take a chance.
And I do like to take chances. I just, you know, that mental block's like, that's not a good chance. That's a bad chance.
Right. But it's $2.
Right. And, you know, that was the one thing. Back when I actually worked at the Leaf on Friday nights, when guys would come in and ask for those, like, I immediately thought, that person should die. You know what I mean? I was like, and not because they're going to smoke it, but because now I have to open the jar and smell it. That is an awful smelling cigar.
The jar does not smell good at all. So keep in mind, the jar is like,
you don't
want to
buy a jar of those.
It is the concentration of the smell of the trade.
I feel like whenever I would open that jar,
yeah,
like evil spirits from hell were coming out. Like, no, shut it. That's how awful that cigar smell was to me.
I can see that.
You know what I mean? He's like, yeah. Oh, I don't want to open that jar. But you know what's funny is, as your journey progresses and you learn so much more, it's like, even working at the shop then, my palate was not anywhere close to what it is now. And back then, when I would see what people were buying, I was like, oh, that's going to suck. That's not good. You know what I mean? Because yes. I had been there.
Yeah.
But now I'm here.
Right.
And so all along the way, you're learning the intricacies of like the blenders and how they put together the wrapper with the binder. And then where are the tobaccos from that they blended with? And what kind of effect were they going for? It's amazing to me that a blender can put together an experience in a cigar.
Yeah. And that's so it's the loss on the flavored versus standard cigars is the intricacy. And so you look at the blender has this desire in mind, right? And he makes a cigar for this palate. Keep in mind, there's like millions of palates out there. But he designs a
cigar.
Now,
when you say palates, are you talking about like there's millions of like those wooden palates?
No. Mouth palates.
So wouldn't that be billions? Not millions. There's billions.
I would say millions because of what those are that
you
are
think
cigar smokers.
Similarity groups.
I would say because there are very few cigar smokers that they're hinging that on billions, millions, maybe billions. You know. I'm hoping here. But I wish there was a video.
Back in 1962. Hey,
but,
you know what?
But they're gauging towards this particular palette, right? And so they're wanting to get the best possible
match
they could.
I agree.
Yeah.
But you know, the growth part is when you go outside of that. That's the growth, because I would have, if I just stuck within what really hit my palate, I'd still be smoking LFD Chapter 6. I thought that was the cat's meow.
Meow.
And after my travel journey through the cigar realm, it's like, that cigar doesn't even make my top 100. That's how different my palate is now versus then.
Yeah.
But at the time, my palate was screaming, all those cheap-ass cigars you bought back in the day, this cigar is the shit. You know what I mean? And so then when you realize that price does not dictate the cigar, then you can go on a really good journey.
I agree, and honestly, it's not the price that should dictate your journey. It's like just the experience and the LFD cabinet. It's a great cigar. not to discount that cigar.
No. There, you know what? For some people right now in the spot where they are, the LFD could be like the most amazing cigar they will ever smoke.
If they can get it?
If they can get it, right. Do you have any?
No.
How long has it been since you had some? Because I know you had months, okay, not years. Because there for a while, it was rough getting anything.
Yeah.
What's now, that, the Digger? We were out of the Digger Maduro for at least 3 days, as far as Gary was concerned.
So we'll say this.
Let me say one more thing. It was amazing to see Gary start smoking other cigars.
Yeah. It was nice.
I mean, just for his own experience.
Yeah. Now, LFD, and you might have a different experience where you are. LFD, to my knowledge, has graduated their last or their most recent batch of rollers.
Really?
Yes. So...
Now, let me ask you this, though.
Yeah.
When they bring in these new rollers, are they going to actually, like, go down in, like, a basement and find a trap door and slide down a little woohoo slide into a room that has that wrapper tobacco from the 2015s? Or are they still going to be rolling the little thin stuff that they switched over to?
No, yes. There's a...
You didn't know they were saving that woohoo slide for, like, this is where the real rappers are.
No, from what I am told, the rollers have been graduated, and it should... LFD, as you know, or maybe not, have had, expanded their factory. And so...
Too fast.
Well, they expand...
That's debatable, but in my opinion, but go ahead.
They expanded their factory, and they needed more rollers. And so they put a class together. They got more rollers. And graduated them. And they are rolling for LFD. And.
Now that I've been down here in Abilene, Texas, it's and. Abilene,
Texas is and. And. They are scheduled for 2022, December, to be at full capacity.
Really?
So, what that means is, as long as...
Is a two-syllable word.
As long as...
Hey, just because we're drinking stuff from Kentucky doesn't mean you're from...
Bert. My heavens. I'm overcome by the vapors over here.
That's damn good. I'm impressed.
So as long as they are on schedule by 2023... Everything should be readily available. Now, that is
hey, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something real quick.
What's up?
Your glass is like a three-finger drink right now.
Is it?
But what I was going to tell you is, you know, every time I pour myself a drink doesn't mean you have to pour yourself a drink. You don't have to keep up, bro. But dude, look out. I'm drinking out of a small
glass. So everybody knows, now realize that Rob's glass is so much smaller than my glass. And
mine is like a two-shot glass.
Yeah, but I'm pouring a little bit of water into mine.
I see a little bit of water, but now you have a four-finger drink. So there's still three fingers of early times in there. I'm just saying. I was like, dude, you realize that my glass is small.
Well, you pour your glass.
And you know, this is really Larry's glass.
Oh.
Like when Larry's here, if he doesn't get this glass, he pouts.
You know, Larry has a glass at the Leaf. And if he doesn't get the right glass.
Oh, I know. I went back in the back yesterday, or I was back there with Casey and Larry, and I had a bottle of something. And I was like, let me get you a glass. He's like, yeah. So I go up there. I get one that's close to what his is. It looks just like his. It's a smaller glass.
Right.
I take it, and he's like, that's not my glass. I'm like, oh. Well, I missed. It had etched on the side Crown Royal. And his has no etching whatsoever.
Correct.
And I was like, I'm not going back. Use it or go get your glass. And so he went and got his glass. But I was like, I gave it my best shot.
Yeah, Larry has like a very ribbed glass. And
if you think about Larry's like routines, like what he expects, what, you know, his system is. He's not that far off from Joel that sits up in the corner. <He's not. laughs> You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's why Larry gets him. Because they're really not that. They're both tall. I guess that's the only similarity. But they're both tall.
They're both tall.
They have like a system. I mean, you know Larry. There's times Larry won't go sitting back in the back because what's in his system is, I'm going to be in the office.
Yep.
Or I'm going to be at the front.
Yep.
Like me, I'm pretty much just, I'm going to be in the back. I mean, unless you're in your office and you're not getting swamped by work shit, which is 99% of the time.
I tell you what, I'm looking forward to the time where I'm not being swamped.
Dude, that will never come.
Well,
no, it won't. It won't. You know what? Because as the things that keep you busy 99% of the time now are like you have a process in place that just knocks that out.
Yep.
There'll be new shit that you don't know of yet that's going to keep you busy as shit. You're never going to sit around the lounge and smoke cigars. That would be cursed. You can't do that. I mean, I would love for you to, but the reason the leaf is what it is because you don't rest on your laurels.
Yeah. So that just goes to show for anyone interested in starting their own cigar lounge.
Call Jay. Jay would be like,
no.
Hey, I mean, long as you're good for like being working your ass off for 12 to 14 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, if you're down for that, but also you approach it in a way. And, you know, I feel sorry for you a little bit because you're not getting to enjoy what I enjoy at the leaf. And so, but at the same time, I'm like, you know what? I would give him some recommendations on how to cut back. And then I'm like, but it might put a damper on my experience.
So my wife, Kristen, she
knows you're a workaholic.
She's super encouraging.
But you know what's so awesome about your wife is she gets it.
Yeah.
She knows you need this.
So, full disclosure, when I got back, I said, hey, Rob called me. And she's like, okay.
Oh, I know what that means.
No, she was like, if you feel that you can do it. So, as of this show, like I just got back from Dallas. It was I drove, I don't know, 530 something miles back and forth. And got back, went straight to work, and Rob called me and said, hey, I need you on the show. So I did. Well, but first, I asked my wife.
Now, wait a minute. To be fair, Jay is completely transparent up front and says, let me check.
Yes.
And then I said, I don't mean to be a dick, but can you let me know pretty soon? Because if you can't, I need to start calling a couple other people. That's how I plan
that the is,
show is I go, hey, can you be on?
Can you be on? If not, let me know. I got other people I have to call. And to be fair, I immediately called my wife and said, hey, I need to be on the show. And she goes, are you okay? You know, you're not tired? I said, I don't think I am. And so she said, cool.
Nice.
And so...
But I'm just telling you right now, dude, how long have you been married? How many years?
13.
13. You realize in a month for me, actually a month and 12 days, I will have been married for 27 years.
We should do a married guys, cigar lovers podcast.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
But I can't tell you what an amazing woman that I've married.
Yes.
I mean.
Miss B? Oh, my God.
I mean, like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, how, you know, I feel bad for her. You know why?
Why?
When you find a woman that amazing and she gets stuck with me. It's like, I know.
I was thinking, Miss B knocked it out of the park. I got a second base run.
Yeah. You know, my wife, I'm not deserving. I'll tell you that. I'm a piece of shit.
We all are.
Right. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't deserve someone who is, because I see people all the time that have wives that they don't get their shit and they don't want to get their shit. They want their husband to get their shit together and conform with what they think getting their shit together looks like.
Right.
And I'm like,
dude, I see that all the time on the Facebook. Yes, I call it the Facebook. That's what it was originally called. I don't care if you are too young to know. It was the Facebook.
You know the cool thing about the Facebook?
Yeah.
Is, you know, my wife was one of those people they invited early on.
Yeah.
I probably got on like 2 years, maybe 2.5 years later.
Yeah.
And it was like, holy, this is actually pretty cool. Like, I put in, like, what school I graduated from, and bam, here's all these people that I can see, you know, however many years later, how they're doing.
Right.
And then it was like, oh, family can share photos of family members, and we can keep up with what's going on. That's cool.
Yeah.
And then you fast forward to today, and it's like... I hate this.
Yes.
They took the goodness and they ground it up into a big 500-pound cow turd patty. And they mixed it together. Now, that little experience that you had that they had ground up, and it was like an ounce. And then they ground it into sporadically into 500 pounds of cow shit. And now that's what they're feeding you. Yep. You're taking all the cow shit because every now and then they sprinkle in just a little bit of goodness.
Yes.
Right?
That's how I... That's... Oh, my God. That's exactly
that nail
how
it?
I feel. Oh, my God.
Dude, that nailed it, right?
Oh, my God. That nailed it.
Because you're eating all that shit... Just because every now and then you get the goodness.
Yeah.
And then, but every once in a while, you get so tired of eating the shit that you're like, I gotta get off of here for a while. And I do. I, like, as far as a marketing guy for Cigar Talk, when it comes to social media, 3.5 years ago, I was fucking in it. Like, I was like, I had a set schedule of what time I would post photos, I would post comments, because I wanted to grow the channel.
Yep.
And now, dude, sometimes on Instagram, I might not post for 3 to 5 days. And I'm like, wow, you're really not doing a good job. But it's like, who cares?
Who fucking cares?
I mean, you're right, though. It's like... Let's talk about social media, what it has become. And it is the exact opposite of what us as cigar smokers enjoy.
Yeah.
Like, you have the evil side and the royalty. And royalty is your community.
Yeah.
The evil deity is...
The tits and the unburnt cigar.
Right. I mean, you know, when you're talking about social media and how it devours our time. I mean, like, it doesn't take up our time. It devours it.
Yes.
You ever been, like, on Instagram, Facebook, or whatever, and, like, checked out one of those videos, and then you scrolled up once, and then you're fucking doing that same shit for, like, 40 minutes. And then you're like, what the fuck?
What the fuck am I doing?
You know what I mean?
So, there was a... There's a video that my wife and I share. And from time to time, we don't have to even say anything. It's just, as soon as we notice that one of us is doing it, it's the, that Lion King. Check my social media.
Yeah.
So, we do that. And it's funny. It's funny now. And it's funny that she holds her social media with mine. Not to say that I'm better, but I carry the social media of the Leaf. And so now I need to make sure that if there's any posts or any questions or any PMs
that you're dealing
that come
with
through, I'm dealing with them.
Right.
And God, that
it's a lot.
It's a lot, and it's the saddest part is I'm losing the grip of the good old days.
Well, and I mean, I'm the opposite. As I grew the social media audience of Cigar Talk, what I didn't realize, because in the beginning when I was growing the following of Instagram,
yeah,
do you know how many everyday guy cigar smokers I chatted with and even had phone calls with?
No.
I don't have time to do that anymore.
Yeah.
And that's not cool. That's not fun.
Yeah.
And when I scroll through Instagram now, it's like it's just one big commercial.
Yeah.
Whatever. And it's not the companies that are doing it. It's the people.
Yeah.
Why? You know what I love to find? Every now and then someone will do a friend request and I'll say yes, but I always go to their page and look and make sure they're cigar related before I say yes, because, you know, there's a lot of bullshit out there.
Right.
And so anyway, when I go to someone's page and I scroll down looking at their content, when I see just like everyday, like family type photos or whatever, I'm like, look, a real human. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I love that because it's like, if you look down through my profile, 99% of the photos are cigars.
Yep.
So are you going to tell me that that's all I am is a cigar? No. But I don't have time or it doesn't fit the mold of what people do. So, I mean, really, I guess that's what my main thing is. It's like, I love to see into the lives of other people. It's right. Like the reality of what's going on in their life. And I don't want to see, you know what? If you're a woman and you're listening to the show, which I doubt, but let me tell you something. All these photos and bullshit you do with those filters. Come on.
Stop it.
Stop it.
God.
Dude.
Show me you.
I mean, it's not even so much that I want you to show me you as it is that I'm like, who gives a shit what the people think that you send these photos out to?
Yep.
You know what I mean? You don't have to be freaking perfect.
Don't doctor yourself up.
Right.
If you have the courage to post yourself on social media, don't have to doctor yourself up.
Let me tell you something. When you see a photo of a chick and you can't see the darkness of her nose holes,
fake.
It's brown.
Fake.
Like, come on, honey. Your nose holes are not perfect. So, anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know how we got off on a rant by that, but I was going to bring up one more topic. I got to take the lid off. Here we go. Yeah, so, before we go, this yep. last weekend. Now, this is a topic I wanted to cover before we go. And okay. we also got to give a shout out to McAuliffe Cigars,
yep.
Case Elegance, Tabanero, and the one and only heavyweight champion of the world, the Leaf.
Oop, oop.
You know, what I ask for you guys is if you enjoy this show, work with our sponsors because we have gone out and found the best of the best. We didn't just like decide anybody could sponsor this show. We wanted it to be like when you order one of these products or you work with the Leaf, your experience is like above and beyond
yes.
what we want it to be. We yes. want it to be like something special. And so you look down the show notes and there's a link for all of our sponsors. And if you're looking for a humidor, cigars, or a shop, we've got it all for you right there. So
one
make sure
stop.
You look down the show notes stop. And click on these sponsors to see exactly what they have that they could, you know, knock out for your freaking month.
Yep.
Anyway, that enough about sponsors. Anyway, okay. So what were you going to say? Or was it? Oh, I was going to say.
You.
I went and saw. Oh, well, first. Growing up in Hawaii, how old are yeah. you now?
40.
40. Holy shit, Jay. 40. You've crossed the divide.
I've been past the divide.
I mean, because.
And I sing the other side.
For me.
And I can tell you.
40.
It's the same.
No, it's not the same.
No.
You haven't been in here long enough in the 40s to understand this change, but you will.
I will.
But growing up in Hawaii. And you're way younger than me, so I don't even think it was a thing. But what did you know while you were growing up as a child of Elvis?
Elvis was a guy that made a lot of music, and he actually had a hotel on the island that I'm from that he performed at. And it became a treasure that
lived a long time.
Lived a long time despite weathering and hurricanes and...
And people not fixing it up.
Yes.
Like, 'cause, I mean, once it was paid for,
yeah,
they didn't maintain it right. like they should. So anyway... I'm a generation older than you, and I'm going to tell you right now, dude, I was a freaking Elvis nerd when I was in elementary. Like, in 1978, I was in third grade, and when you would go to the convenience store, they would have sports cards, like football, baseball, and actually, back then, I think it was just baseball. But next to them, they had Kiss cards. You know the rock band Kiss?
Yeah.
And then next to them, they had Elvis cards.
Oh.
I bought the Elvis cards because I wasn't cool like the kids buying the Kiss cards.
Yeah.
But I, dude, Elvis was a superhero to me. Like, he wore these crazy outfits that looked like superheroes back in the day. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And he had... a million songs. So I was a fan.
Yeah.
Like, I was a hardcore fan at a young age. And the thing about it is, I went and saw this movie, and from what I've read, it has mostly truths represented.
Ooh.
And what I learned was Elvis was a monkey in a cage, let out to perform. And then locked back up.
Ooh.
And it was very sad.
Yeah.
Hey, I guess I should have said spoiler alert if you were planning on going to see the movie. But, dude, I was, like, crushed. because this was like a hero of mine when I was in, you know, early ages.
Yeah.
And then for me to see the reality that he didn't do anything he wanted to do.
That's...
It was sad.
Yeah.
It was really sad. It was like the dude with this much talent was partnered with a guy that was a carnival show act, which is... Seriously, his manager was a carnival show act manager.
Yep.
He had never managed anything over that scale. And he locked his hooks into Elvis, and he had him until he died. And, you know, a lot of people don't know. Are you aware that he died when he was 42?
Yes. Early 40s, yes. 42, plausible.
Like, when he died, they announced it at our school over the PA system. No shit. Dude, it was Elvis. Every woman in this country wanted him to have a pair of his her panties. Even when he was 42. Damn. And, you know, I also heard this, and I don't, you know, I don't know if it's true, but I heard that he said some racist shit. And I have two things to say. First of all, he grew up in Mississippi.
Yep.
I'm sure he heard a lot of racist shit all the time. But anytime he could get away, run away, stow away, he didn't stay in Mississippi. He was on Bill Street, Memphis, like hanging out with all the black folks.
Yeah.
One of his only friends. I mean, you got to realize, dude didn't have any friends. You think you have friends, but if you are making the kind of money that he was making all overnight,
yeah,
you no longer have friends. You have people that are on your payroll. You know what I mean? And there's a difference. And so seeing his life unfold, it was like at one point his manager was like, you can't do this without me. And he was like, well, I got my dad and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, your dad's on the payroll. He's already making decisions that benefit him more than you.
Yeah.
Wow. You know what I mean? That's an eye opener. And so at that point, I think is when he really realized, nobody that I know and thought I loved gives a shit about me. They give a shit about me getting up on stage and making that money for everybody.
Yep.
It wasn't just like two or three people. We're talking hundreds of people.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy. And I mean, it was sad. Anyway, if you were an Elvis fan, I highly recommend the movie.
Yep.
It was eye-opening. And if you want to live in that fantasy that, you know, the king was the king, go for it. But if you want to see the movie and know that he was nothing more than a monkey in a cage, you should go see it. Anyway, man, that's going to wrap up this week's show.
Yes, sir.
So we want to say thank you to Jay.
Thank you.
Not just for filling in tonight, but also for what you do at The Leaf.
Thank you.
I mean, dude, it's really, you've made it. And I, you know what? I know that this is not like the Leaf 3.0, and there will never be like a Leaf 83.0.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not like, I'm not thinking 4.0. I'm thinking 83.
Hell yeah.
So, anyway, we appreciate you coming by and hope you guys enjoyed the show. We want to say thank you to all of our Patreon members that support us weekly. Yep. You guys know who you are, and it is a blessing, and it is what helps us stay. Anyway, until next week,
keep smoking.
Booyah!
Who cares about the clouds when we're together? Just sing a song and think about sunny weather. Happy trails to you till we meet.